Welcome to episode 3 of the Respect the Beef podcast. So this week I am chatting with a chef from Abbotsford. His name is Craig and he is the head chef at the Bow and Stern restaurant. There's one in Abbotsford and one in Chilliwack in BC. And this is us having a chat and having a laugh about buying local and sourcing local and catering for everybody's needs, regardless of whether they're herbivore, omnivore, or carnivore, and the future of the local movement. So have a listen, enjoy, and maybe laugh along with us. Just don't laugh at us.
Standard responses to things like, hi, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm well, Amy. How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks for asking me to do this. This is great. I'm excited.
I'm really nervous.
Well, it's a little different than TV. TV's a little different than the radio. At least, you know, you can't make a funny face and nobody's going to see you or something. But that's a bit different, you know, but that's all right.
Yeah. It was just like, I've been thinking about doing something like this for a while because, like, there's so much that I want to say and I want to ask and I want to learn and I want to get so many people's opinions that Facebook and Instagram, it doesn't allow for all of that. Like everything gets too confusing and
yes,
we're so, I don't know, like passionate is the only word I can really think of really supporting the like the beef and meat and local and knowing where your food comes from, that this kind of seemed the best forum for it.
I think that's a great way to put it. Very much so. It does get muddled like on other platforms or things that it's almost like, how can you get out just how excited you are about what you do on a platform where somebody can hear it and just hear the excitement in your voice or what you're talking about or how you're doing it or how you got to doing it to just make it so you can just share it with everyone.
Exactly. And not be interrupted by the trolls and the haters and
fair enough. Yes,
share the passion.
One or two of those around nowadays, isn't there?
Oh yeah, it's, you have to be super careful with how you word things. All right, so I did do a little bit of research on you, well, not on, as much as I could from your, I cyber stalked you, and I have a friend who loves your restaurant, who
thank you
there all the time, like she's thank always you posting pictures and things about how amazing it is. So I did have a wee look at the restaurant, and is it new, because I don't think it was there when we lived at the coast.
It's so we're coming into, so the restaurant's been around 6 years. It's owned by one family, the Smith family. They are from the interior. John is from the interior, I believe, and Jackie's from the lower mainland. And they had a number of fish and chip chops in Kamloops for a number of years, back through the, if I'm speaking correctly, I think through the 80s and 90s. And then they closed them and just took a little time off, I believe. And then with their one son, Jordan, they opened up Bow and Stern 6 years ago now in Abbotsford. So it was their first kind of kick at the can as a full service restaurant. And then it's been an astronomical success for the family since then. I joined them almost 2 years ago now as their executive chef. So I oversee both their kitchens, and we just opened almost a year ago now, a second location in Chilliwack. So yeah, it's been a busy 18 months, 2 years.
Inspired you, or what moved you to kind of source local? I mean, is that for just for the restaurant, or is that for you and the restaurant, or just for you?
No, it's a number of years ago, I said to my wife, I said, I sort of feel like I live this double life. You know, running and managing a restaurant is all about cents and dollars, you know. The overhead's high, your labor costs are high, your all your costs are high, right? And at the end of the day, you know, if you can make 5 to 8% at the end of the month as profit, you know, that's a good month, right? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, there are very few select restaurants that are able to keep the as farm to table status as you would like it to be. I think a lot of restaurants open that way, and you know, people assume that a number of years later they're still operating that way, you know, which may or may not be the case. But running a restaurant is difficult, you know, when you're buying seafood from around the world, or you're buying meat or beef even, you know, and it's, you know, Western Canadian versus Western Abbotsford, or, you know, Western BC, or what have you, right? It's very challenging to do and to manage those costs and keep those costs in line. And then personally, I've really enjoyed knowing where my food comes from. I like to know the farmer, the people, the place, where it's from and what have you, right? And you know, I don't have a memory or, you know, as I call them, an Oprah moment of like this being my life forever because of this situation or this what have you. I've just always been incredibly curious about it and just wanting to know more about it and where it comes from and how it comes from. And, you know, why are we eating raspberries in December when they're not even in season in whatever part of the world? You know, it's just little things like that have never really kind of, I guess, made sense to me. So I've always been very curious about it and wanting to support a more local movement or a more local vendor, even if it does cost a little bit more.
Mm. So do you like, is it just local that you are interested in, or do you support sustainable ranching and regenerative agriculture, which I think most local producers or most local small ranches have jumped on the sustainable bandwagon because it does make more sense?
I think if you can support your local vendors that have sustainable agriculture, regenerative agriculture, like you said, in whatever part of the world you are, I think that's a win, right? I think if you're in a position where you can support that farm, ranch, group of ranches, whatever word of status you can give to that, I think that that is huge and a great first step no matter where you are.
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in the north of Scotland and everything was seasonal. Like we had our own, there wasn't a supermarket. Like there really wasn't until there was one built in our, there was a co-op built in our local town when I was like 8 or 9. And we had a fish man that came around on a Friday and you got your fish on a Friday because I don't know, that's like the thing to do.
Yes.
And you got your meat from the local butcher, but it was all local and all your vegetables were grown. So you didn't have raspberries and strawberries in the middle of winter. And it was super exciting when they started blooming in the garden and we'd be kids running down the rows, like eating as many as we could.
Yeah. But
it was just, that was life. And like, it was, I mean, I'm not that old. That's not that long ago. And the carbon footprint of people then was way smaller. Whereas if you think everyone's so focused on carbon footprint this and carbon footprint that, and but if you're bringing in raspberries from Australia or Spain or Mexico into Canada, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah. Like, well,
it has such an effect on the environment that everyone's harping on about.
Right. And I think part of that, like, you know, if I don't know how freely I can say this or you know, hope I don't cause any backlash when I say this, that the European, I'll say market, is very different than the North American market in how things are done or produced or found. You know, there aren't, you know, and I say this as loosely as possible, please feel to correct me if I'm wrong, mass grocery stores where you go every day and pick up what you want. You've got your markets that go and you go down and pick up what you need for a day or two. And then you go back to the same market 2 or 3 days later. And that's life, you know, and that's just the way it's continued. Where in the North American market, you know, we've got mass grocery stores. We bring in everything from across the world, no matter where it comes, at the best price. But on the backside, we're burning more fossil fuels. We're taking longer for it to get there. We're taking more energy to bring something from far away that we shouldn't even be consuming. It's very backwards.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is, for sure. And you, like, do you take that into account in the restaurant, or is the money the bottom line?
From a professional standpoint, it's hard to manage that, because if we look at going back to sustainable agriculture, the world itself can't sustain itself on sustainable agriculture to feed everyone around where it is. You know, it's just not physically possible.
Not the way we do it now, no.
Correct. So, you know, does that rage in the back of my mind that, you know, these strawberries are coming from California or whatever, and it's December? Yes and no, but unfortunately, you know, that's what people want, you know, and it takes time to change those minds or change those perceptions or change people to understand that this isn't what we need to be doing. But at the end of the day, you know, it's what people want, and it's a difficult thing to balance on most days, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably like, I mean, I don't have a restaurant, but having someone like yourselves, and I know there's other restaurants out there that have locally sourced specials, or, and they advertise that. And I think that's important to let people know that you can get these tiger prawns from the South Pacific, but we also have amazing Dungeness crab that comes straight out of White Rock.
Yeah. Well, and I think especially when you look at seafood, you know, the West Coast is an incredibly bountiful area, you know, between halibut and crab and spot prawns, cod, you know, you could even as far as skirt the lines and going up northern into Alaska, and you've got a paleo crab, and then you go a little further north, you know, we're getting a little more muddy at this point, and king crab and stuff, right? You know, the West Coast from a seafood perspective has a large bounty to it, you know, and that does play towards the sustainability and what we're able to source at the restaurant for our menus as well, right? So yeah.
I do miss seafood. That's one thing, like, I love living here. Like, I think this is the best move we ever made, but I've always lived by the ocean, and so is Scott. And he worked at sea. And the one thing that I miss the most from being here is seafood.
Yeah, fair. I'll have to send you a seafood care package. How about that?
Sure. Or I'm going to come down and come into the restaurant.
that too, right? We'll bounty you up for days to come.
That'd be awesome. So what is your opinion? Like, one of the reasons that I really did start this was because I think for a whole week, every time I logged into our ranch page, I was bombarded by meatless meat and chicken-free chicken and beef is bad. And there's Bill Gates who wants to stop beef and all, like, I don't think the world is ready to have zero meat. But as a chef and someone who's passionate about food, where do you stand on the meatless meat movement?
Well, I think that we all can stand to eat a little less meat.
Agreed.
If we can all support better meat, right? Whether you want to be vegan, vegetarian, lacto-ovo, pescatarian, sometime vegetarian, whatever kind of word you want to attach to yourself, I think if you can do that and be truthful to yourself about it and how you are, that's great, right? The meatless movement, I think, is just another... the meatless movement has been around for a number of years. If we go back to, I remember as a kid being in the grocery store, seeing tofurkey and wondering, what is a tofurkey? What is a hot dog, not hot dog, you know, and wondering, like, you know, like, what is this? I don't understand. Like, why is it in the vegetable counter? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Right.
Yeah.
This movement has been around. And I think that with these other, large companies that have come on board that, you know, I don't think we need to say their names on this platform. We all know who they are. I think that they're also trying to find better ways to provide a better meatless product that maybe has a lot less mechanically made products or stabilizers or preservatives or additives or stretchers or whatever other word you want to put to it, to provide a better meatless meat for those people that want to be it, right?
Yes, exactly. For people who don't, but to push it for the broad spectrum, like, it just feels like everyone is pushing that this is the way we have to go. We have to go meatless, that the world cannot sustain a meat eating population, which I don't think is true.
No, I would agree with you on that. I think at times, I think when it came out, it was very preachy. It was very, this is where we're going. Everybody needs to get on board with it. And I was kind of like, that doesn't really sit well with me. You know, I appreciate what they're doing and stuff, but I think it's toned back a bit now. There isn't as much mass marketing on it, or as mass, maybe I'm just more ignorant to it now, I'm not sure, but I don't see as much mass marketing on it saying that this is the be all and end all of life now. You know, every major fast food outlet that you can think of has got on it, and away we go, right?
Yeah.
At one point at the restaurant, you know, the conversation had come up saying, hey, you know, maybe we need to do this, you know, maybe, you know, this is what everybody's doing. And I kind of looked at everyone and I said, well, why do we need to be like everybody else? We know our guest base. We know our guest base well. Yes, we have some guests that come in that are vegan or vegetarian, and we can accommodate them and their requests. You know, I put a few menu items on just, you know, by default can be made vegan or vegetarian. with taking the meat off or taking some dairy off or what have you. And that's just by default, not thinking that that's what I'm doing, but thinking about what I made, I'm like, oh, if we take this off and this off, these now five items coming up on our next menu change can be made to accommodate people more, right? Do we need to bring on another product, right? But at that time too, bringing in other products, especially when we're in a meatless movement like that, you know, it is a lot of logistical challenges for a restaurant when you are, I'll just say a meat-focused restaurant for broad sake, you know, in terms of your tools, your pans, your sanitization, where you store your tools, what you cook with, right? You all of a sudden need to provide new tools and new pans and new spaces and new boards and new things, because in the event that something potentially could happen to that guest and they get something in that, that's a huge issue and a huge challenge.
Yeah.
Right? And that's something that I'm not willing to tackle right now. Right? Because it does provide a lot of logistics, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what we've done, I think, is done well, but I think that if we can all eat a little less meat, a little more better quality meat, support our local friends, whether that be beef or chicken or what have you, I think that that's where we need to look at. And that's where we, from a society, need to look at ourselves.
And that's where I kind of like the term flexitarian, in that you support vegan and vegetarian food choices, but you're very aware of where your food comes from and you have meat once or twice a week, not every day.
That's absolutely
that's kind of what I think we are. But then I was, there's so like, is it Epicurious? So they're not doing any beef recipes anymore. They did that big announcement. And then there's also on the back of that, someone else, there's this, I can't remember the name, I'd have to go research it, some top restaurant in New York who is flat out said, we will not cook beef or supply beef because it's bad for the environment. And that's where I think the message is screwed and wrong, because it isn't bad. Like, well, it's open having choice. Like, I think you're doing an amazing job giving people who want a vegan or vegetarian option, they have that option, but it doesn't influence the rest of your customers who don't want that option. Like, you're catering for everyone, but someone to flat out say, beef is bad, we will not have that in our recipe repertoire or in our kitchens, I think that's just misinformed.
I would agree with that. I think it is misinformed. I think there's, you know, if I can say it again, I don't know how much backlash I have for this, a bit of grandstanding at the same time, right? You know, I can't understand why Epicurious would do something like that. Yes, I read their press release or whatever, and yeah, okay, great. But, you know, I think that to take something that's been in the world since, you know, God, as far back as you can research, you know, I think that's a bit narrow-minded to do, honestly. And I think that that's something that, I think it speaks to other vendors or other major publications that haven't done the same thing, that, you know, this isn't the right time or the right place, or this isn't really something that is going to continue for very long, right? I think that the meatless movement is merging itself into society, and I think that Epicurious specifically will find itself that, you know, it may lose a bit of readership, it may gain a little more readership, who knows, right?
Yeah.
Other major publications are still staying true to saying, like, yeah, there is a movement, but the mass population of our world, or even just North America, is still on a meat forward diet or basis, and that's important to still maintain that.
Yeah, like, I think
access to that,
I don't see why people have to label things. Like, I think I did a post on our page not too long ago, and it's a post I've done a couple of times, but it's all choice. Like, I have the utmost respect for vegans. My best friend is her and her husband and her kids, they went vegetarian and then vegan, and when they come and stay, I stock up with vegan everything. Like, I support them, I admire them, I respect them, because it's not an easy choice. I was a vegetarian and I respect that too, but I don't see why it has to be either or. Like, I don't see why people can't just accept that, okay, we eat meat, but that doesn't make us evil or bad. You choose not to, and that's your choice. But I think we all want to work together for the same goal, which is ethically raised food choices and sustainable agriculture, and not what you do is wrong or what I do is wrong. I think it's not as black and white as that.
No, I think you touched on something really important there, Amy. I think the word ethical raising is also a big point, right? And it's funny when you look at eggs, you know, and I try to support buying eggs from vendors or farm stands or stuff that I have around, right? Because again, you know, I can see the farm. I like to look at it. I like to see the chickens, you know, and it's not because I'm checking on animal welfare or is this farm doing something right? It's just, it's what I like, you know? And I like to make that connection that if I can see that farmer or somebody working there and I can say, hi, and who are you? And what do you do? And how are you? You know, it starts a relationship and I like those relationships and I like to build on those relationships. You know, and I went to the store because I, you know, the place I normally buy eggs from, unfortunately, was closed for renovation. So I do go to the store and I'm standing looking at the egg section and there's, I don't know, 18 or 20 different SKUs of eggs. And it's all just misinformation. It's all very confusing information, you know, organic, free range, local, free run, whatever, you know, out of cage, kind of cage, plastic cages, metal cages. Sometimes they're in crates, sometimes they're in boxes. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm like, you know, it's just so confusing. And I think that there's so much confusing information about what is ethical and what's not. And I think there needs to be a defining line between what is and what isn't correct, right? And I think there's a lot of this gray area. And I struggle with that myself, that I'm not an individual that enjoys a gray area. I like black or white. I like a defining line. You know, that's just kind of where I am. But it's challenging because people just don't know. And when they get on a vegan bandwagon, and again, I speak as much knowledge as I have, and if I'm wrong, I hope someone will correct me. But, you know, we get hung up on the ethical part of it, right? I'm vegan because I'm fighting for animal rights, and I think this is great. And I think it's great, but it's how we're doing it. And it's doing it in an educational way. And it's doing it in a way that we're trying to promote a better way to do it. Not standing at the slaughterhouse with a sign blocking trucks coming in. That doesn't do anything to me. And that sort of makes me more upset that we're doing that instead of doing it in a way that makes sense or can educate or can show people what can be done or what should be done. Right?
Agreed. Like I kind of maintain that we, the meat eaters, are the ones that are lining the pockets of the meat industry. So it's us that can determine or make the changes towards a more ethical industry, as opposed
Absolutely.
To people who aren't eating the meat and aren't lining the pockets, that you're making a lot of noise, but they just put on speakers or whatever and don't listen to it because it's not affecting them. Whereas if I was a person who ate, I haven't had fast food for like 20 years or so, but if I was a person who ate McDonald's every single day and then I suddenly stopped, that would have an effect, a small one, but it would have an effect. And it's more the people who are consuming that product are the ones that can change the way it's produced.
Yeah. Well, and it's cost too. You know, when you look at the world and there's, you know, major conglomerates like McDonald's, like you said, that can change the face of agriculture by manipulating a product or adding a product. Like look at when McDonald's added breakfast all day. Overnight, there was a mass shortage on pork overnight. What does that say about our agricultural system?
Yeah.
It's pretty, you know, blank backwards, you know? And that needs to change. But, you know, I don't want to say like I sound defeated saying that, like, how do we do that? But I think it starts going back to in the beginning, you know, a little less meat, a little better quality meat, and away we go. And I think that's how it has to start to change.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? I don't know. That's me.
I agree. So my last question here, I'm going to kind of wrap it up slowly, but still.
I hope I'm not rambling. Am I rambling on for you?
Oh, it's awesome. It's really good. It's okay. Really good. So if you had a direct line to your customers, like if you could talk to them, whisper in their ear or like, what would you say? Like, what would be your message to either customers of the past, present and future? Like you've been a chef for a long time, that what would be the one message you would want them to really take home?
Oh, wow. Holy cow. What a question. The one message I'd want them to take home. I would have to say is that I hope I've done respect in showing you that no matter where your food has come from, I've treated it with some sort of respect for you, right? And I've done my part in showing that, you know, we can support our local vendors in some ways. Yes, we're still, you know, bound by mass agriculture a bit, not a bit, a lot, I should say. But hopefully I've done some respect for what you've dined with us tonight.
Okay.
Oh, that's a tough question, Amy. That's a
That's a good one.
That's a thinker. Like I was, I feel like I am on Oprah now. I wasn't really prepared for something like that. No, just don't be sorry. No,
it's actually almost a perfect segue into, I'm doing another interview later today, but it'll be the next episode with a lady who is trying to establish a database for local vendors. So she is in all across Canada and Northern North America, and she's trying to establish this database that allows people like you, like me, like next door, source vendors to buy their things, their vegetables, their produce, their dairy locally. And she's calling it the local vor movement.
Oh.
So this actually segues really nicely into next week's episode, because she is hoping to give everyone the as much access as is possible to really support local. So. All right, well, I am going to, I mean, I could stay and talk to you for hours. maybe we'll have to come back and do round two in a few months.
100%, anytime, I'm down for it.